all come pouring in. It's a quiet lie, but in my mind, the sound is deafening. And it's all the regret, and it's all the shame, and it's all in my head, but it's stronger than any chain. You could waste your whole life waiting for that mountain to move, but it's waiting on you. It's waiting on you. It's waiting on you. You gotta make it.
Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should. Here's your host, Mark Davin.
All right, folks, our next guest is someone that I've wanted to have on the show for a long, long time. He's actually on the wish list. People know about the wish list. I'll tell him about it in a minute. The wishing list board that we have up on the wall here in the studio. And finally, we've got him. And folks, the only thing more urgent than his guitar playing, sounding urgent, is his voice. And I want to talk about that, too. Folks, we've got Mr. Johnny Lang on Guitar Radio Show. How are you, Johnny?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm glad to talk to you, man. Like I said, I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time. And I love the new record. It's really, really great. It's sort of an amalgam of you in many respects. I don't know if you feel that way, but it's like everything has got that rubber stamp of it. There's Johnny. There's John.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. It's always a challenge for me to, like, when we're done kind of recording, I feel like that's, you know, we've introduced so many styles, you know, by the end of it.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's, you know, a thread of continuity.
No, absolutely. There's, yeah, and the common thread is your voice, the way you put over a song. And the guitar playing. And that was one of the things that really struck me the very first time I heard you, way back when. First thing that when somebody told me, "Hey, this dude's 15." I was like, "No, he's not. He can't sound that. No one has a grown man voice like that at 15." But it was true, and what's amazing is over the years here now you're 36 now.
Yeah,
you're 36 years old, and you know your voice hasn't changed. It's still that really that sense of urgency to your voice. That's what really blows my mind, and it goes with your guitar playing. You're such a passionate guy, and I really appreciate that and what you've done with your music. It's really fantastic, folks. The name of the new record is called Signs, and. You can get it anywhere. I got it on August 5th when it came out on iTunes. You can get it on Amazon, I'm sure, and anywhere you download music. If you can find a record store, you can go get a hard copy, I'm sure, probably of it somewhere. And you can also go to johnnylang.com, and there's lots of cool stuff going on there. You can actually see the new video, the latest video for what the heck is the name of that track? Oh, Stronger Together, which is a killer. Really killer, kind of a soul funk track, pop vibe to it. Really good stuff. So, I was talking to a friend of mine. You know, I'm here in Austin, Texas, and you were just here actually, and I got to see you. It was great.
Right on.
Yeah, you were at the Moody on the 16th. And what do you think of that room? Pretty cool room, right?
Man, it's tied for first for. Favorite places to play. Well, I think a lot of it obviously is just because it's in Austin, and it's such a great music town, of course, and everybody is a different type.
Yeah, you're breaking up. You're breaking up quite a bit. Can you hear me? Hello, Johnny. Oh, looks like I lost him. In Austin, the movie theater, yeah. And you were saying It's a runner-up to what?
It was a what? I'm sorry?
A runner-up. You said it was like your second favorite place to play?
No, I was saying it's kind of besides the first for my favorite places to play. The sound of the place when there's people in it.
Yeah.
You know, on stage is just, man, it sounds so good in there. And the people are so warm and welcoming every time. We just have a great, it's always a great all-around experience when we go to Austin. I really look forward to
that. That's cool.
There.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. And you played great. And I noticed you were using that Les Paul a lot more than usual.
We've been messing around with, you know, the order of the set list and different songs and stuff, and so I haven't, we're still trying to figure out which one flows the best, but we kind of, Austin felt pretty good to me set-wise, and I'm not taking into account, you know, how many guitars I play, or how many songs I play which guitar on, so I probably ended up with a lot of Les Paul songs for trying,
Yeah. One thing I noticed about this disc is there's a lot of positivity on it. Strong messages. It's soulful. It's a really soulful disc. But, you know, we just heard Make a Move, and that was the opener for the record. Why was that the opener? I know that was like the last song you recorded, right?
Yes, I believe it was. Yep, I think it was. Yep.
Yeah. But it ended up being the first song on the disc. How did that end up happening?
I don't know. It just seemed to, it felt like an opening song. I don't know how else to explain it. It just kind of seems like a song that sets the tone for the rest of the record.
Yeah, it's
pretty well.
It's got a Roots vibe to it. Like I put here in my notes, it's like a Roots explosion.
Yeah, man. It definitely, I mean, listening to, Howlin' Wolf Records and stuff, sort of around the time I was writing some of these songs, and I think a lot of that snuck in there.
Yeah.
You know, he was some moons playing, and some of the tones in the Howlin' Wolf songs, production-wise, are just so amazing. That song... That song probably had some elements of that.
Yeah. Was this a different record for you to record this go around? Was there a different process for you than in the past?
No, the process itself wasn't, there was nothing, too unique about it. But we had, it was Jen Barry, bass player and drummer that are usually on the road with me, and, bunch of the other guys as well had come out on the road, and I think probably just if there was one thing different, it was having a lot of the fellas who were on the road with me playing in the studio, more so than normal, I guess. They did such a great job. So
yeah, it sounds.
In store, I couldn't wait to get out that door, to move my feet, chase those dreams, hold on a whirlwind to explore. I had no wisdom, a perfect victim. And when I start to rest up along the way, I heard them hissing out my name, coming up fast out of the ride. Thought I'd get away running for my life, but they've been waiting, no escaping. Let me tell you that I should've listened to my mama when she told me there's danger on that road. I thought I was a grown man, but I just wasn't strong enough to hold my own against the snakes in that grass. There's snakes in that grass. There's snakes in that grass. Oh, lying in the dark, I felt so strange.
So on the next song, Snakes, Snakes right now is my favorite song off the album, off the record. And that song is 10 years old?
Yeah, probably, at least. We we wrote that and tried to record it. Well, we did record it. 10 or 11 years ago. It just didn't feel right for that record. So we kind of shelved it, and then we just recut it. And turned out it seemed more fitting this time around.
I love the background vocal on the chorus for those vamps. It's just so freaking cool. It's like fuel injected Motown.
Oh, right on.
You know.
Explain it.
Yeah, I thought it was so cool. And you know, we didn't actually talk about the last track, but what were you using on Snakes? I mean, I know you're a pretty straight ahead guy when it comes to your gear and your rig and everything else, but do you remember what you were using on Snakes?
Yeah, I was using my buddy's Gibson 235, and through this little national amp, I think it's called it like a 1025 or something like that designation. I've never seen one before, but it's just this little 5-watt amp with an 8-inch speaker, and I used that amp on most of the record, actually. But just those two things. I could turn that amp.
That's cool. Yeah. So that album, that amp was just dimed then, right?
Yeah. Yep.
It's a killer sound. I'm sitting there, you know, of course, being the geek I am, I'm sitting there going, okay, what kind of pedal is he using here? And it's not a pedal at all.
Yeah. And basically, the only thing I did is it's something I do a lot. Put on a bridge pickup and then turn the tone, you know, either all the way down, the tone on the guitar itself, all the way down, or just shy of all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of find a sweet spot, and it just makes this, you know, sort of fuzz pedal.
Yeah, for sure. And it can also give you, turning that tone down can also give you a little of that flat wound sound too.
Yeah.
Very cool. So the next track that I really dig a lot too is Last Man Standing. I was listening to that and I was saying, well, this is like real soulful rock, more of that positivity and fortitude and lyrics, you know, that, you know, it could be for anybody. That lyric could be almost for anybody, I think.
Yeah, man. Are you saying that the message on the song?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was kind of a surprise. My buddy Drew, who I did the record with, he came up with the idea for that song, and we figured we needed like a rock song, and it turned out to be going a totally different direction than I thought it would, and but it was a happy accident, you know. Kind of ended up sounding a lot more like a kind of, rock radio song than...
Yeah, I can hear that. Yeah, for sure.
Not that it will be on rock radio, but it kind of has a little bit more of that vibe, you know.
Well, yeah, unless it's Lynyrd Skynyrd, Led Zeppelin, or Pink Floyd, it's not on rock radio. I don't understand how that's happening, but it is. So what were you using on that track? What kind of gear was on there?
I know, so Drew Ramsey, I did the record with, just to get it out of the way so I don't have to keep, I'll keep re-referencing them. Drew Ramsey and Shannon Sanders were the fellas that I kind of wrote most of the songs that then produced the record with.
Right.
So Drew played guitar on a lot of the stuff, like rhythm stuff, and Shannon plays keys and sings. They both sing on it. So Drew was playing guitar on that song on Last Man Standing, along with myself. And we kind of, as we did with the rest of the record, we cut it live, you know, in the studio, and then I went back and did the vocals afterward. But yeah, it's just him and I playing guitar, basically. And we both had really simple rigs, like I said, but I'm just using that amp, I think, in that Les Paul on that song. And he's just playing, like, my old Stratocaster, which was, like, my first guitar that my dad got me. He was playing that, and through just, like, a, you know, a deluxe or something with a couple pedals, and so pretty simple rig.
Yes. So when you're using an amp like that, obviously you're not going to take that, unless you're Jeff Beck, you're not going to take that out on the road with you.
Believe me, I've been trying to figure out a way to, but I just think it would vaporize the, you know, the first time it went down the road in the trailer.
Yeah, the cone would just like disintegrate on the speaker cone, you know. But so is it hard for you to recreate that live later? Because I know you're using, like, what, Fender Blackface reverb amp live.
Right.
So is it hard for you to recreate those sounds or those tones?
It's a little challenging, but the cool thing about live, you know, when you're trying to achieve something, at least for me, guitar tone-wise, trying to make it, it doesn't have to be exact, you know.
Right.
In fact, it works kind of better if you, I feel like that amp in a live setting, you know, it would be great and stuff, but I think these amps are probably a little bit better. They're just a little more clear and, you know, focused sounding, and probably pull up better in the mix out front than that amp would.
Mm-hmm.
It would probably be a crazy mess.
Yeah, you'd probably lose it all in there. It'd be like mud.
Exactly, yeah. All those nuances you get in the studio, they don't really come across exactly. They just kind of get lost and muddy.
Yeah, it really is two different worlds. Absolutely. Let's talk about the title track, Signs. So I wrote tons of notes about this record. So I've got here, Stompin' Blues Beat with a Dirty Slide, and another impassioned vocal. And that solo, man, I think that's probably the top solo on the record right there. It's almost like you're purging all your frustration in that solo, because it's like, well, you ever drive on Mulholland Drive in California, in LA?
Oh yeah,
that's what that solo is like. You're driving Mulholland Drive really fast.
Getting ready to fall off the edge. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's kind of how it feels, actually. Honestly, when I'm playing a solo, sometimes it's just like, okay, I have no idea of the direction we're going here. I'm just going to, you know, fly by the seat of my pants and see if it works. And...
So is that the Les Paul on that? Or is that the Telly?
That is, that's a Les Paul.
Yeah. It's still got a fat sound, but I for a while I was like, I couldn't tell for sure if it was the Telly or not. But
You know what, man? It's not either one. It's a Supro. I've got an old, like, 74 Supro dual tone.
Oh,
that's the guitar I played on there. Yeah. Now that I think about it,
that's interesting. Okay, cool. Are those humbuckers or single coil?
Yeah, they're humbuckers.
Interesting.
Yeah, that guitar is. It's amazing. I mean, it plays terrible, and your hands get all cut out playing it because it's got all these sharp edges on the
on the fretboard.
Yeah, it plays terrible, and it doesn't play in tune too well. It's got like a wooden bridge, but man, it just sounds so cool.
So it's perfect for the studio, then.
Yeah, that's another thing that would be in pieces. No time flat if it's down the road.
So with a guitar solo like that, were you? Was that a one take, or was that planned, or, you know, did you just go for it?
No, we just cut the song. I think that may have been like, we didn't do too many takes of the song, so that might be like the second or third take or whatever. And it was just the solo that was on there when we cut the track, you know, with all the band guys. So
it was live with the band.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Yeah, I like that. It's a great track, and I saw a video. Actually, I think it's the EPK for the album, where you said, you know, you really weren't in favor of naming the album after a song on the record, but you ended up with that, and I think really it was a good choice because of the content of the lyric, and just what's going on that record, on that track.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I always, you know, want to name an album something clever, something that, like, ties it all together, you know, and I can never come up with anything, so it's always last minute, and they're all in going, we need a name for this thing, and I'm like, okay, we'll name it after one of the songs.
Yeah. So are you?
Yeah, I think that Science is a good one.
I think so, absolutely. Yeah, especially, you know, and you had mentioned in that EPK that, you know, it's what's going on in the world, and, you know, how different our world has been in just the last couple of years, and kind of topsy turvy. So it's it is cool to kind of look out for the signs, watch the signs. Absolutely. Do you usually use pedals in the studio, or no? You're just pretty much straight into the amp.
For the most part, on this record, it was just all straight into the amp, and then, you know, just adjusting. The amp has one knob, and it turns on the amp and controls the volume, and that's it. So it was like mess around with that level, and then, you know, like I said, just switching pickups or guitars, or, you know, rolling down the tone knob, or just, you know, trying to get different tones that way.
Right.
So, but it was pretty much the same amp for every song except one, which I'm sure you're going down the list.
Yeah, we're going to get there for sure. Well, it's kind of, you know, it's interesting because it kind of makes your life a whole lot easier. It's sort of like when you're setting up the drums, you get your drum sound. And then, okay, now it's time to build around that, and you're hoping that everything's going to sound consistent through the record. And, but yeah, for sure.
Well, I learned something. You know, you can do in the studio. You know, you can do little moves. You can do tiny little moves, and they make big differences sometimes. You know, and you can make one amp and guitar sound a bunch of different ways just by,
mm-hmm.
you know, manipulating the guitar or the amp themselves instead of adding pedals, you know.
Yes.
So it was pretty cool.
That's great.
There's a blessing in the lesson that we all must learn, but we hardly recognize it when it comes our turn. Don't you fight it, don't deny it, don't you try to run and hide. It'll only make it worse, it's gonna hurt, but don't you cry. 'Cause when you get knocked down, it's when you find out what you're made of.
What You're Made Of. This is like this funky R&B, but true R&B, not what R&B is today. True R&B. I always I crack up when I read, you know, Billboard, and it's like R&B. It's like, no, that's not really R&B. So what's going on with that track? Where'd that all come from for you?
Are you saying What You're Made Of? The song What You're Made Of?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I think I'm still on the last song. What You're Made Of was... It came from, I think, a couple ideas, song ideas I had floating around over the last few years, and sort of put them together, and then finished it with Drew and Shannon. That's another one. I knew that the verse would be kind of like Bill Withersy and kind of have a little bit of that sort of vibe to it, but that was another one that kind of surprised me at the direction that it took. I had it as a bit more of a rock song, and it ended up being a soul tune, so
right.
it was great.
You know, it's funny, most people when they think of you, when I talk to people and if I mention your name, they're always going to say, they always say to me, wow, he's such a great blues guitar player. And that's true, but at the same time, it's a fallacy in the sense that you're not just a blues guitar player. How do you feel about when people categorize you in that way? Are you okay with that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm fine with whatever perception someone might have. I mean, if somebody is... if the music on the record is affecting somebody in a good way and they're enjoying it or it's helping them out, they can call it whatever they want. I don't care. or categorize me as an artist however they want. Because
yeah.
I do the same thing, you know. I think we all, when you really enjoy something or something, you know, kind of inspires you, you want to capture it and, like, put a handle on it that you can reference, you know, and it's just what we do, I think. So, no, that doesn't bug me. It's cool.
I mean, you know, I was talking to, I was just recently talking to Tyrone Vaughn, Jimmy Vaughn's son, who's got a new project happening here in Austin and beyond with Malford Milligan. And we were saying how it's so interesting that, you know, watching Jimmy all these years coming up, and now all of a sudden Jimmy is being considered one of the elder statesmen of the blues, you know, now that BB's gone and people are looking towards Jimmy more and more, I'm noticing. You know, here you are, you're 36, and you've been at this already a long time, since you're 15, 13, really. And can you foresee that for you down the road someday, being an elder statesman of the blues?
Man, that's...
I bet you no one's asked you that one.
I haven't really thought of that one. Yeah, nobody's asked that question. I certainly wouldn't, you know, proactively pursue that title.
Well, I don't think anybody does.
If it were to happen, that'd be really cool, you know? I'd be honored, you know? But, Jimmy is well-deserving of that.
Oh, absolutely.
He's just one of the greatest, man.
He
one
is.
One of the greatest.
He is.
Guitar players and songwriters, I mean, He's great.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. If you followed him back from the T-Birds and all the way through to now, it's really interesting because he's so different than he was then.
It's when he came out with that Strange Pleasure record, we used to listen to that before our shows every night to get pumped up.
Yeah,
because we were all in love with that record. So, yeah.
And more and more, he's like in this Earl King vibe. You know, it's really interesting.
Cool.
You know, it's really, really cool. Next time you're in Austin, if you're here on a Friday or a Saturday night and he's in town, usually he's playing at a small place called Seaboys with Mike Flanagan, and usually George Rain's on the drums and Mike Flanagan's on the B3.
Oh, you know what? I almost did go down to that. Not this last time, but the time before we were in Austin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to go. It's a trip. It's a great evening for sure.
Right on.
Track Bitter End. This is like an intense rock tune. I was like, oh man, I can see everybody with their lighters up. You know, actually they don't use lighters anymore; they use their phones now. I was just dating myself.
LEDs
right there.
LEDs don't have the same vibe.
No, it doesn't have the same
vibe.
Yeah, it's all these. It's like these brick lights up in the air. It's really. So where did that track come from?
Man, let me think back. I had written the chorus, like the, you know, chorus idea, I guess, and just had that laying around like for maybe like 2 years or something, and kind of had it earmarked a little bit, like this is something I'd like to work on, and then brought it to Drew and Shannon, and we finished it up, and the way the band interpreted that song was really, really cool. It wasn't quite what I was expecting, but it was a lot better than what I had in my mind. So.
That's cool.
But yeah, it's just kind of like this arena rock.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Song, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. No, yeah, I totally can hear that. Absolutely. And it's got to be the Les Paul on there, right?
That's a good question, man. I honestly don't remember, but if I had to bet, I think you're right. I think it's probably a Les Paul.
Yeah.
You know I'll always be a friend that you can call when no one else will call back, with the key under the doormat when there's nowhere else to go. But you already knew that. I can see you when you're hiding, yeah. And I can hear you even louder when you're quiet. I'm here to help you fight it. Remember, remember, when you feel the weight of the world is weighing on me, weighing on me. When it's raining
All right, the next track is actually your latest video. Folks, when you go to guitarradioshow.com, if you're listening on European radio or any of the other websites, go to guitarradioshow.com. You'll be able to see the video in the show notes for the next track, which is Stronger Together. It's really cool funk pop tune. I like this track. It's upbeat.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. There's no darkness going on here at all.
Right on, man. Yeah, that was, I think I was sitting down on the couch at home. My wife was there, and I was like, do you like this idea? And she's like, yeah, you can finish that. So, because I didn't really know. She's my litmus test for everything. And so, yeah, she gave it the green light, so kept writing that one, and then finished some of the lyrics with, like, Drew and Shannon. And,
mm-hmm.
It turned out to be, like, a bit more of a sort of, like you said, pop soul song than I had initially thought it would. I had that one imagined differently as well. But I think you can see the theme forming where it's like, I love to let the fellas, you know, whoever's playing in the studio sort of interpret the songs, play it for them on acoustic guitar or whatever, and just let them find it themselves, because it usually turns out better than I imagined. So same deal with this song.
Yeah. I'm always interested about, you know, what with Snakes and all being 10 years old and other tracks that we've been talking about that are, you've had bits and pieces of for a long time and kicking them around. How many tunes do you think you have in the can that are just like kind of in various stages of undress?
Oh, man. You mean like recorded in the studio?
Yeah.
You know, there's probably a good number of extra tracks laying around from just piling up over the years. I couldn't tell you how many. You know, on this one, I think we overcut by one song.
That's it, huh?
Yeah, which is not, you know, too common. It's usually more than that. So, but yeah, there's probably a few laying around.
That's cool. So you think there'd ever be an extras kind of a disc that comes out?
The ones we didn't like. I hope you enjoy it.
That's a great title. That is so perfect for today. That is so perfect. The ones we didn't like.
The budget record, man. I already spent the money. Just
it's
throw it all together.
That's great. It's an EP. It's a download only. The ones we didn't like. I love it. That's great. So, Into the Light. What's going on here, man? Where did this come from?
Well, my buddy Dennis, just a good friend for, I don't know, we've known each other like 15 years now. He's a great musician and producer, and he came up with that riff on the song. And he was playing it at the
It's a cool track. It really is.
Somehow loneliness slowly got a hold on me. It won't let me be. It's keeping me awake at night. Got me thinking about all of these crazy things that I don't wanna think. It just ain't me. Don't think I wouldn't give my life to have you near. Please don't think twice about us, dear. It's been a while, so I'll make it clear that it ain't that house we live in, and it ain't that ride I've been fixing. It's just you, baby, that brings me back home. I've got to get off this road I travel. Sometimes it's more than I can handle. I need you, babe, to bring me back home. Tired of living my life so many miles away. I need to touch you, babe, too far away.
All right, the next track to me is like classic Johnny Lang to me. It seems to me that the track Bring Me Back Home to me sounds like and you correct me if I'm wrong, but where you're most comfortable in these really soulful, meaningful, just gut-wrenching, you know, vocals with these amazing guitar playing. Is this kind of like, do you think it's classic you? I know that's a hard question to ask.
I can see what you're saying. I mean, I do feel very comfortable on like ballad, slow stuff, and you know, I have a lot of fun trying because there's so much space, so it's fun to discover the places where singing something or playing something makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and you can just, there's so much play in there to get creative with your phrasing and,
oh yeah, I mean both vocally and with the guitar, right? What was the track that you did off of that? There's a record that got done here in Austin with Chris Layton and Tommy Shannon.
Oh, yeah, that was their record, Double Trouble.
Yeah, the Double Trouble thing. And you came and you did the Austin City Limits because it was the one that Dr. John sang, but you came and you did a live version of it.
That was a long time ago. I remember we did a song that they wrote with I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, it's this song Groundhog Day, and I remember that one. But I do remember doing another song, yeah, because John wasn't there, so.
Yeah.
But I have a hard time remembering the name of the song.
Yeah, that's what this track reminds me of, though, in that in the feeling you get from it. You know,
I know, man.
It's just this. Well, you know, part of it's blues, yes. Part of it's got a gospel thing, like you're taking us to church a little bit, you know?
Yeah. That's what all these different styles, you know, they all you know, they all work together. And you know, it's sometimes you stumble on a you know, a cool combination of it. And that song is definitely, it kind of reminds me like a an old, like a Muscle Shoals sounding ballad, you know.
Yes.
Out of that studio or something.
It could also be a great duet, that track too.
Yeah. We did that with my friend Josh Kelly. I don't know if you know who he is, but he's a great artist, singer, songwriter, guitar player. And so we actually recorded that song at his place in Utah. And that's the only song, it's the only song on the record we kind of did outside of the other recording session.
Uh-huh. But that's the same. Is that the same gear, or did you go with different gear on that?
No, that was that's the one song. It didn't use the national on it, but it was a little Princeton, this little old Fender. I don't think it was a black face Princeton, but the silver face one.
Uh-huh.
And but it was just Les Paul going straight into that thing. So that was one of the best sounding Princetons I've ever heard.
Huh.
It's really, really fun. So.
Yeah, it's amazing with gear too, isn't it? That sometimes there's just something about it. There's just a ghost in the machine of some kind that just makes that one stand out.
Yeah, man, it's weird how it's weird how the same amps and guitars on the assembly line sound completely different.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it's no different than like cars. You know, they used to say, "Never buy a car that was built on a Monday." Next track is called Wisdom. It's more of that roots revival stuff. This is really stripped down, this track. I love this track, man. This is so cool. And you're doing this live.
Yeah, that song's pretty much Drew and I were getting ready to leave the studio one night and just kind of start playing that song. It just kind of came together all of a sudden, and and then went back and overdubbed another guitar part under the one I was playing live, and like halfway through the song or something, it comes in. So, but yeah, it's just two guitar parts and singing in foot stomps.
Are you doing both both guitar parts?
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, I'm doing both.
Super cool. I love that track. It's so great, and it sounds great live.
Oh yeah, I mean, we're still trying to work up all this stuff and figure out how it can work live, but I think that's one we'll definitely be adding in.
Yeah. So how much rehearsal time did you have with these tracks before you went out and actually started playing them live?
We did 4 days, I think. 4 days of rehearsal, 3 days, something like that.
That's it?
And, yeah. Because, you know, most of the fellas had played on the record, so they kind of knew the tune.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
But we did that video for Stronger Together in that rehearsal space. So in the video, that's where we were rehearsing all that stuff too. So we tried to kill two birds there.
Sure, save a little cash too that way.
Yeah, it's all about saving cash these days.
Yes, it is. It's a different business. You've had to have seen from the time when you first started. It's a huge change, isn't it?
It's a totally different thing. Yep, totally different thing. But good, you know, it's better in a lot of ways. But it's not necessarily easier.
No, it's not easier. But I bet there's more freedom.
Yeah. There's good things if you can embrace just the concept that things are going to change. You know, at a rapid pace these days. It's just the age we're living in. Then you can find something positive in the new way of doing things, you know, doesn't make you completely lose hope.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, because it's like for me, you know, because radio has withered on the vine, essentially, you know, a show like this can be born and can start off really small and now grows into this other thing where now radio is syndicating my show. So it's kind of a, you know, it's this weird thing, you know, but...
Exactly, yeah, opened up a lot of doors.
It does, and you know, like you said, it's about evolution, and it's about figuring out how to be part of that evolution and not get run over by it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's sort of like we were saying about the being elder statesman of the blues. You just got to be around long enough. If you're good enough and you're around long enough,
yeah. If you live long enough, you'll be the head of something.
Yeah, you just got to have hang time. That's all. Last track on the record is sort of a left turn, but yet there's still that common thread. And this track, I was like, there was no, I couldn't hang my hat anywhere on this as far as trying to label it in any way. At some points it sounds, you know, with the orchestra, it sounds operatic. Some of these chord changes, some of the way that you're singing, and it's this great song called Singing Songs. This is like a song that it to me almost sounds like as if it was handed down from generation to generation. Does that make sense?
That's cool. That's the idea. That's the whole. That's what the lyrics are about. I mean, and that's it's strange. You know, that you said that because when we started writing the, it was my friend Duan and we started writing that probably like 7 years ago or something.
Wow.
And it just kind of sat for a while and. But that was the vibe we got. It was like, this song just feels old, like it was, you know. So some old ancient, folk song handed down from generation to generation. That's what the lyrics ended up kind of being about. So,
And the music sounds that way too, though. That's the cool part.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, that's what. That is probably, of all the songs on the record, that's the one. I mean, we didn't have to really craft. I use that word, but I don't know another word to explain it. We didn't really, have to craft many of the songs. They just kind of came together. But that one, we, it took a minute to sort of put all the pieces in our places. The string folks that we that played out in Nashville just did such a great job, and the soloist did such an amazing job on that. And so it was fun for me because I hear a lot of the songs that I write kind of have stuff like that going on in them in my head anyway, and I just don't really know how to write music or chart strings or anything like that. So it was fun to be able to finally be a part of that.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, it's the record is really, it's very organic sounding record to me, and you can tell that a lot of it was played live with the band, and then I'm sure you went back and fixed some stuff and everything else. But once again, that sense of urgency to both your guitar playing, your voice, and in the songwriting creates this very natural sound. That is really, really pleasurable. I mean, I was playing the record for my wife, and she's like, "Wow!" She goes, "This is really good." I was like, "Yes."
Of all the things you said, that made me feel the best. I think that your wife said it was good.
Yeah, right.
I've learned since being married that usually wives are right about most stuff, as we all know.
Yeah,
So that's awesome. I'm kind of glad she liked
it. She really enjoyed the show too. We had a blast. We had a good time. And the cool thing, like I was saying about that room, every seat in that room is a good seat. So it's really tuned well. So yeah, you were putting it out there, man. That's another thing I wanted to ask you. When you're out there and you bring it, and is it when you leave at the end of the night, when you walk away and you get on that bus, are you spent?
Not very often. It's usually the opposite. I'm usually kind of still amped up and have a hard time getting to sleep. But it goes in cycles. Of it. Like every, once a week I'll crash because I'm exhausted or something. But it gives me energy more than it takes it away, I feel like, some reason.
Do you get to bring the family with you at all?
From time to time. That's not as much as I'd like to. I'd like to have them out here all the time, but can't really do that at this point. So, they've been out on the road before.
That's cool. Well, man, I know that you got a busy day today. You're playing tonight, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, where are you playing? Yeah. You're at House of Blues tonight?
Yeah, we're in Chicago at the House of Blues.
Yeah, House of Blues, and it is sold out. From what I understand.
Yeah, and this is one of the better House of Blues. This one and the one in New Orleans are my favorites to play, just sound wise.
I think this was the first one, right? Was this the first one? This one here?
You're probably right. I think actually the very first one was on the East Coast somewhere, and it's just this little place.
The one on 57th, I think it is, yeah.
It's up in the Northeast somewhere. Yeah. But yeah, I'm sure it's one of the first ones.
Yeah.
We've been playing a long time.
Well, cool, man. I can't thank you enough for taking the time out today. I know you're busy and hanging with us and talking guitar and talking about your new record. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate your questions and all the kind words you had for the songs. Thank you very much.
Well, it's a great record. You know, folks, you can go get Signs anywhere you download music, and if you can, go find a hard copy. That'd be cool, too. Thanks again, man. I hope you have a great show tonight. Great rest of the tour. I know you're going to be busy. I was looking at the whole itinerary, and it's out of control, man. You're hopping all over the place.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of crazy, but I guess you got all the albums out, you know, the whole album cycle thing on play. So I'm thankful to be able to have all, you know, the work, man. It's great. So
it is great, and you're working with the folks with at Pro Vogue and Mascot. And those are great people over there. We dig them. We speak to a lot of those folks, a lot of the folks on that roster. So I'm sure they'll keep you hopping too.
Yeah, man, they're great.
Super cool. Well, Johnny, thank you very much, and stay in touch with us. Let us know what's going on, and we'll see you next time you swing back at Austin.
Right on, man. Thank you so much.
All right, have a good one.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye bye.
Check out Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, and Tumblr, and of course, on guitarradioshow.com.